Welcome back from the break, and it was wonderful to hear that song. So, in the time that remains, we have about a half an hour. Let me see if we can touch into a few of these other aspects, elements of nature and the other world, and the awakening of the Celtic spirit. And then I really want to take a little bit of time around animals and trees. So I'm going to try to do this first part rather quickly. What I want to talk about is actually the Findhorn community in the north of Scotland. How many of you are aware of Findhorn? So maybe a third of all of us. I won't go into a lot of detail. There's a book here, or actually a few. The Findhorn Garden Story. And Findhorn is in the north of Scotland. It sort of sits halfway between Aberdeen and Inverness on the Moray Firth in the village of Findhorn. It was founded in 1962 by this woman, Dorothy McLean, and a couple, Peter and Eileen Caddy. And they had been on their own spiritual journey for many years, involved in a practice of inner listening. And really, it was what they called a training of inner listening to the God within, which is a path many of us have also touched and called to. But that journey for them led them to being inspired to work using their intuition and using what they felt was it wasn't just a passive relationship, it was a co-creative relationship with that presence, with that God presence within. And they really felt themselves guided and were led to this trailer park that was really a dump, a garbage dump, and on the sand dunes where nothing much grew but gorse and heather, and even at that, not much heather. And in their journey of 7 years there, they discovered through Dorothy's inner listening, and by the way, Dorothy in her book here is her memoirs, it's actually a wonderful story. She worked for the British Secret Service. As a person who was more of a scientific mind, had gone to university, Canadian woman, early university woman, able to go to university in her generation. She's now 91. And her other book, To Hear the Angels Sing, tells of her story of awakening to what she calls the innate presence and intelligence within nature. And what she discovered, and it was quite a surprise to her because she knew she had a job to work in the garden and to work with growing the food which they needed. They were really on a subsistence income and they needed a garden to grow their food, and her own inner sense of inspiration kept telling her that she had something to do with connecting to nature. And she sort of thought, oh, that's ridiculous. Nature is just nature, and, you know, didn't have much of a sense that there was what she discovered quite by surprise. Suddenly she got a message from it was the sweet pea that she was planting. And the message was a very beautiful, inspirational message. And it changed and altered her completely. And what she began to discover is that innately, inherently, within all sentient life forms is divine intelligence, is divine presence in a unique expression. And if you can harmonize with that, and she called it attune to that presence, you form a co-creative relationship. And that co-creative relationship will help you get inspired and informed of how to, in the case of the sweet pea, grow the sweet pea in the maximum beneficial soil and with water at the right time and with the care that's going to bring it to its greatest fruition. And so began the journey of the creation of the Findhorn Garden. By the time I arrived there, and actually I was taken there as a student going to school in England in my high school years doing my O and A levels, the young girl who I roomed with, who became a friend, as often happens with foreign students, both here and abroad, you're taken home for the holidays with a family and you get to spend the holidays. And this was Easter holiday, a month, and guess where I went with the family? They had a bungalow at the Findhorn Foundation. And that's how I came to Findhorn, was on my Easter break as a student in England. When I arrived at the community, there were only about 45 members, but the gardens had 53 different vegetables growing and 48 different fruits. And this was in the north of Scotland on a sand dune. Now, mind you, compost had a lot to do with it, but their compost even was from this connection with nature. It just intuitively and again through this inner listening of getting the inspiration, this needs more seaweed or you need to do something different here. And over those years, since 1962-64, they did a lot of experiments. They had scientists come to the community. The area of northern Scotland experienced a severe drought, I believe in 67-68. Findhorn, during that drought period where the farmers were struggling, the plants were growing in great health with not having to use as much water. Findhorn became known because of the 40-pound cabbage that was grown during that drought period. And so the British Soil Association and different people came up and they kept saying it's the factor X. And of course, Dorothy and Peter Eileen said the factor X was the God factor. Of celebrating God in all things and in knowing that God intelligence moves through each form of life. And a lot of people who think about Findhorn or hear about it now think of fairies in the bottom of the garden and sort of, you know, little elves and gnomes who there help work. And that's sort of our anthropomorphized images of nature spirits, which have been, as Juliet spoke about yesterday, have been part of the legacy of the British Isles for a long, long time. And even my mother-in-law, Rogers English, Mary Collis, she tells me of her growing up with her grandparents and mother. They all had fairies at the bottom of the garden. This is just what you had. Who were helping? And they helped through the Second World War when the Victory Gardens were created, and this sense of the other has always been at the edges of the British people. And as Dorothy, in her explorations with what are these intelligences, she called them Devic beings, devas, because she thought angels themselves we have sort of made in our own image. But her experience of them is that they were great beings of intelligence and of light and of energy. And that pea that communicated, the sweet pea that communicated to her that first time, was actually a planetary being. It wasn't a little gnome. She was tapping into what she now describes as the morphic field, the species intelligence of all sweet peas. And so the experiments at Findhorn in those early days drew many people to come and understand, either in disbelief or in curiosity, and for others it really did awaken something within them about what it means to move to another level of co-creation and cooperation with nature. They did such experiments as gooseberries. The gooseberry plants were dying. They were being attacked by a disease, and then the worms, caterpillars, were coming, eating the leaves and the buds. They would do such experiments at Findhorn of just, let's take half of the plants and just radiate our love and gratitude. Every time we walk by them, we stand there, and just like I felt your radiance of your blessing this morning, which is pretty cool. That's a pretty neat experience. I hope you all get to have it. You're a powerful bunch. You could do a lot with gooseberry plants. And maybe with pollution in the ocean here. But that gratitude pouring forth from everyone who walked by to the half of the gooseberry plants, and the others were ignored. And sure enough, within a very short period of time, the gooseberry plants that were receiving the love and gratitude began to flourish. The insects and caterpillar moved off of them. The plants began to come back and flower, and they had a prolific crop of gooseberries. The other plants did not make it. So those were the sort of things that they were testing out in those early days at Findhorn. And now Findhorn is a large community of about 750 people. It's an international community. And they grow people. The emphasis is more on people than on plants. Dorothy moved back there a few years ago. She lived up in the Seattle area. And she is striking the drumbeat of them getting back to understanding the importance of what she learned and they learned in those early years. What she came to know is that any problem we have on this planet, from pollution to nuclear waste, can be solved with the cooperation of the intelligence of nature. If we could mature in ourselves to understanding that relationship is good. It's not magical. It's not the worship of the gods of the tree or the gods. It is the understanding that God moves through all of these things. And Dorothy is the first person, when she teaches, she said the only way you can get into that communion, that state of attunement, is by being with God. Otherwise, and she's a harsh teacher on that front, she said it's a lot of its projection. A lot of people project when they come out of their imagination or think, oh, I want to make a connection with nature. There's a connection of a sort, but it that true, deep, transformative relationship that can be born from connecting with nature comes from that connection, to that listening to the heart that is within all things. So these species intelligences speak to the other world. And what Juliet spoke to in the three worlds of the Celts, which was to them so real. And as you said, the person who was sort of came into greater wholeness and maturity was able to function in all three of those worlds. This world, the world of the clay body, the world of the other world of the angelic, of the fairy realm, which were these, that's how they described them as well, these great light beings of the ancestors, those who've gone on before us and those who are yet to come. As well as that connection to the center, to the near, to the pure being and presence of God. So the subtle worlds, in a sense, we're being asked through our scientific discoveries to begin to awaken and realize that we are part of an ecology that is not what we just see with our five senses. even just last week, was it? That, what do they call them? The
neutrinos.
I mean, the fact that we're breaking down and understanding the structure of the body of creation in such a finite and intricate way is just awesome. But science is also bringing us to a place where that meets some of this mystical and meets some of this ancient understanding and knowledge. And in that, it's a very exciting time that we're in, understanding that some of what our indigenous peoples perhaps knew and practiced was not just whacked out, crazy, whatever you call it, sort of unevolved, but actually that there may have been a sensibility and a sensitivity to the subtler realms of life, to the whole ecology, which someone who I really respect as a teacher is David Spangler. He is writing quite extensively, exploring this idea of what he calls the second ecology, which is that which embraces the invisible as well as the visible worlds. Yes, Tom?
Yeah, last week there was an announcement of the Nobel Prize in Astrophysics. It was awarded to three researchers who, among other things, discovered that 22% of creation is accounted for, of the universe, is accounted for by what we can see, what the visible accounts for 22%. Then there's the other 70-some percent, which is dark energy and dark matter, which we still don't understand. So, go figure. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Tom. So, just like place and landscape and stone, so there is presence and that which we cannot see that we're in relationship with. And I think we can all probably have a very vivid or personal experience of that in knowing how we're affected by a place that is what we would call uplifting and loved and vibrant and maybe treasured, to a place that where there's a lot of grief or anger or wounding that has gone on in it. I think we've all had experiences of being able to discern different sorts of environments. What we don't really realize is that we're being affected by subtle energy all the time, the subtle energy of the emotional energy that someone might carry that we encounter. We think we leave and walk away, but we, as David Spangler sort of says, we sort of have auric fields that are a bit like Velcro. And if we're not careful, we can sort of get Velcroed. You know, some of these subtler energies stick to us that aren't ours, and we don't know that. And it is the quality and practice of the presence of love and gratitude, which he speaks about, is just the just like we would take a shower. We need to shower ourselves in love and gratitude and blessing and honoring the sacredness of our own vehicles, just like we would do that for another, in terms of really helping those energies that are not yet resolved, those shadow forces, just find their place that does not need to be carried with us. And this thing of how we are carrying the woundedness of our world, because what I want to say is part of the call of our time is sort of what I read a quote by Wangari Maathai, the woman, African, founder of the Greenbelt movement, who passed away a week ago. Wangari Maathai speaks of this being a time where we are having to go beyond what is my personal issue to our collective issue, what is my personal desire to our collective desire, to my well-being, to the well-being of the earth. We are in this time of awakening and opening and beginning to live on behalf of both of those realities. And we must do that. Her work with trees, in fact, as we come to trees, is so inspiring. There have been over 30 million trees planted in Africa by women and children, particularly women. Her movement was to empower women to reclaim the land that has been devastated. Does anyone here not know of her? You all know of her, or you don't know of her. She's truly, to me, one of the great saints of our time. I would encourage you to look up her name, Wangari Maathai.
Her correct pronunciation is Maathai.
Maathai?
Wangari Maathai is a Kikuyu woman who, in Kenya, who established the Green Belt movement. Yeah. She spoke at Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. A couple of years ago.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The hummingbird. Doesn't give up.
And against threats to her life, I believe, I'm not sure, it might be MAA.
That's
good. And it's the Green Belt movement. 2 H's?
I think it's WANGAA.
Yeah, there's 2 A's somewhere. She had a reverence for the earth. She is an exemplar of what we are exploring and talking about. And she also could see that interconnection between, in her lifetime, the taking down of the trees, to the loss of the water tables, to then undrinkable water, then to the land that couldn't grow anything and becoming parched, then to poverty and the breakup of families and community.
I just got to say that her husband divorced her because he couldn't control her.
Neither could the government. She was thrown in jail numerous times and she came back out because she had a vision. She could see how to restore the system again, and that's the power of her story. And that
Nobel Peace Prize.
And she won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2004. So she speaks to something also that is, there's the subtle worlds which we are awakening to, and then the awakening to understanding the systems of rejuvenation, of healing, and of repair. That wonderful image that you, I think, spoke of, and then I think Juliet, or maybe earlier in one of the talks, about that we, the gift of our own repairing is that we help restore, repair, and bring the harmony back into the creation. So there's also this work of understanding the healing of our world and the systems, because so much of us, we've been trained to see things in such compartmentalized ways. We feel overwhelmed and often powerless. The little things that we can do that can bring that harmony back. And activism, to me, on behalf of the earth, is not necessarily having to do what a Wangari Maathai has done. It's what you can do in your own backyard. It's what you can do in small ways. Because again, in the subtle worlds, as the Celts knew, time and distance were not a problem. We know that through prayer. Prayer and intention and love travels and has no bounds of time and space. And how we hold and envision and work with a plant in our garden can affect that whole species of plant around the planet. So there is an outer activism and an inner activism. There are the powerful, simple things we can do in our own lives, and there are those greater things that are a calling for us to step into and take on. And I think one of the greatest things I find in working with people is their sense of feeling helpless and powerless, and we know what needs to be done on a grand scale, but we don't know how to do it. we don't know how to connect into this greater sense of how, on a planetary scale, in the immensity of this change and challenge we're going through on the planet, how we can make a difference, how we can help. Dorothy McLean at Findhorn at 91 has said, "My assignment now, and it will probably be my last one, is on behalf of the honeybees." And she has a project, and she encourages everyone she meets, and she has a little website, and it's a message that goes out that 10 minutes a day, she wakes up, she makes her coffee, she sits down, has her coffee, and then she devotes 10 minutes of just pure radiating love and gratitude and strength and support to all of the bees around the planet. She knows that is real. A lot of us don't know that actually could make a difference. But she is encouraging people to take on, if not that project, something that calls them, that speaks to them. Jean Bolen, in her latest book, Jean Shinoda Bolen, another wonderful book I recommend, Like a Tree, and we're not going to have the time to go into trees in the depth, and maybe that's for a future time. But she speaks about a lot of the different people, like Wangari Maathai, Betty McCone, Alan Lipscomb from down in Los Angeles of the Tree People, who works with youth and planting trees in urban settings in Los Angeles. They've planted over, I don't know how many million trees over the last 30, 40 years. These people who are activists on behalf of the planet. And in this book, she talks about the importance of trees, which were essential in the Celtic world, because the Celts, not only were trees sacred, but they were sacred because they held presence and stature. They did something that humans also could do. They could mediate between the worlds. They believed that they mediated also between the worlds. And as we understand the science and the biology of trees, indeed they are mediators. We would not be able to sustain life on this planet were they not for the trees. Jean goes into the research, the understanding of trees, different species of trees and what they do, and then about human beings and what they can do. And also the crisis that we're in losing our old trees and our forests, and the crisis of what she speaks of in the continued inequality and abuse of women and children that is taking place around the planet. Because she said, when women are not appreciated and cared for like trees, the repercussions are, and she gives statistics and facts coming out of the Commission on the Status of Women. For instance, there's like 50 million men in China currently who will never have a female partner because of the abortion of female uteros. And she goes through the statistics through different countries. What happens to that male energy that has no way of partnering? It is the hotbed of the growth of terrorism. She makes the connections, much as Betty Maathai has made the connections. So in Jean's passion and work, if any of you have heard her, it is what she calls the restoration of the circles, bringing people back into circle to share from a deeper place within their heart with one another, to give one another courage for their visions and dreams, and to go and follow their call, their personal call deep within on behalf of their own soul, which is also wedded to the soul of the world. And I think In these last few minutes, I'm going to jump. I'm going to put two things together, see if this works, because I wanted us to do something with animals. And I encourage you to explore trees in your life, just like you did place and stones. Each of us, most of us probably have had a special encounter with an animal. Some of us get traumatized by animals. Dogs, let's say. I didn't like dogs, but I love cats. In the chapter on the rhythms of the earth, Philip talks about two stories of dogs. And he talks about Christ speaking through as being a messenger through the animal kingdom. It's an interesting notion, and I don't have the quote. I'm just going to read it out. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's somewhere in the book. So I want us to take these last few minutes and think of an animal that has been very dear and precious to us. And to, again, shut our eyes and reflect on what that friend in animal form brought to us, gave to us, engendered in us, supported. Healed. Did for the family. And as you go and leave our gathering this morning, I'd like you to go deeper with that and see if there was a message of Spirit, of God, of Christ, through that presence of that animal that came to you in your time. And also reflect on if there were ever encounters like with the hawk or eagle. It was the golden eagle that Philip encountered when he was walking at Ghost Ranch. And he ducked down under the log and found the eagle feeding. And then the message that it brought to him. I'd like you to also think back and see if there were your own versions of that sort of encounter that you have had over your years. And when we deeply pray and ask for something in our lives, what are the ways in which the answers are coming to us? Have we opened our blinders up enough to the whole of the world that we are in relationship to be able to even notice, let alone trust, if we have noticed? And finally, this call of our time is for us to step into our own soul calling, our own soul assignment, or the next soul assignment. Probably many of us have had many in our life. And to really heal what gets in the way. Because so much of what we've been talking about in this exploration of the Celtic tradition and spiritual approach has been trivialized. Has been belittled? How many times have we had an insight or a knowing and have tried to bring it forth and have had it laughed at? Have had it shamed in some way? Even to the basis of what Julia talked about last week, the shaming of our own bodies, of our own nature, of our own natural way of expressing and being, which needs to be brought into relationship and harmony to find that greater unity that wants to bring itself forth. But we're far pry from being able to do that if we are caught in that place of the critical, you know, our own inner critics often shame and belittle and trivialize. And so the healing work of our time is to once again restore that trust. The reverence for the earth is also the reverence for what is moving through our own beings and coming to us. And as we continue over the weeks to explore, and this community becomes, in Santa Barbara, is able to grow, you know, how can we really support one another in awakening to that greater unity? And I think there's some very beautiful communities of faith here in Santa Barbara that are doing a fantastic job of that. But this is the work of our time, the call of our time, repairing what has been broken within, which is to overcome that shame. And it is to begin to open up the capacity to listen and move into the silence and apprehend the heartbeat of God, and to truly walk with Christ in the remembrance and helping those we are with remember who they are and that great harmony of life we are all a part of. And so I want to say thank you very much and finish just with the last stanzas of the prayer, the healing peace. Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace of the sleeping stones to you. Deep peace of the yellow shepherd to you. Deep peace of the wandering shepherdess to you. Deep peace of the flock of stars to you. Deep peace from the Son of Peace. Deep peace from the heart of Mary to you. And from Bridget of the Mantle. Deep peace, deep peace. And with the kindness too of the mighty Father, peace. In the name of the three who are one, peace. And by the will of the King of the Elements, peace, peace.